Let's hear it from Local Maximum, episode 47.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to the Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
All right, we're gonna have a little bit of fun today. This episode closes out the Local Maximum for 2018 and opens up the show for 2019. And yeah, we plan to keep going. So first I'm going to play my podcast recording from the Foursquare Company talent show a couple of weeks ago. This was my first attempt at a news-style comedy. It was a lot of fun. There were a lot of other great acts, too, at the Foursquare Company talent show that we do every year at the end of the year. A lot of music, a lot of dance. This was the only podcast recording. So I played with the audience a little bit. I gave a shout out to other employees who have been on the show and then did a little 2018 news, tech news year in review. And after I play that, that's about 7 minutes, I will talk to Aaron. We will go over reactions, some of the recent interviews with Merriam on Google and Shani on the audio internet, and we'll talk about our favorite episodes over the last year, our favorite episodes of 2018, the full list of topics, and some hopes for the show in 2019. And I'd like your comments on it too, localmaxradio@gmail.com. Hope you enjoy. Let's pull up the audio from the Foursquare Talent Show in Fat Denny's cafeteria. All right, so here's the deal. Every week since February, let me put this up a little bit. Every week since February, I've been recording another episode for this podcast. It's called The Local Maximum. I have guests. I have analysis of the tech industry and trends. And I do machine learning tutorials. So who's ready for a tutorial on Bayesian inference? Yeah! No, just kidding. I'm not doing a tutorial on Bayesian inference. I only have one thing to say about that, and that's, I don't care who you are or where you come from, everybody has a prior. If you say you don't have a prior, I'm on to you. All right, that went over everyone's head. I don't know how to do stand-up, so I'm hoping you guys are in a good mood today. And this is the 2018 Foursquare Talent Show. So what is my talent? I'll tell you what it is. It's going into a room and talking to myself. Huge talent. And when you're not talking to yourself, it's even worse. So today I'm going to give you the secret to conducting a podcast interview. So first you find the smartest, busiest, and most successful person that you know. You invite them into a room with you to talk, and then they're forced to watch you futz with the microphone for about 20 minutes because it's not working. So every single time, that's how you do it. All right, and here's another secret to conducting a good interview. One time I was reading this question to a guest, and halfway through the question, it happens sometimes, I realized that the question, it didn't make any sense. So naturally, I tried to kind of pivot to another question, and then I just got confused and screwed up the second question. So the guest was probably like, hey, I don't know what this guy is talking about. So he jumped in, and he answered a completely different third question. So here's what I do. I go home, I delete my section, I record the question that I never meant to ask but was actually answered, and the next day everyone's like, wow, you're such a good interviewer. I don't know how you do it. Your guests never dodge your questions. So basically, cheat. That's the answer. So I don't have a sponsor yet, and I wanted to ask this group, does anyone know anyone who works at Squarespace or Blue Apron? I don't know, maybe I have an in. I hear a few people. All right. So now people ask me if I've had any famous people on the show, and there are a few people that you may have heard of. Stephanie Yang on episode 3. We talked about Foursquare venue ratings, early episode, a very fun one. And just this week, Enrique Cruz. We talked about tip ranking. Chris Conception, natural language processing. Merriam Ali on internationalization. I think she starts next week. Marissa Chaco on building great products. We had Sarah Spagnolo on publishing data stories. And, yep. And on episode 7, Dennis Crowley, finding the inspiration for building great things. So thank you everyone for the group who's up there on the show. Now, this is going to be part of my New Year's episode, actually. So I assume that there is going to be an obligatory year in review for the tech industry. And 2018 was a really strange year to start this podcast. I think in any other year, I would be able to talk about all the great products that came out in that year. But this year, it's all about the wonderful products and features that are being shut down. So let's start with Google. So Google is getting rid of Google Plus. It's sad. I like Google Plus. I always had such a great time on Google Plus during my quarterly login. I'm serious though, it was good. And they were gonna give us some time to grieve and say goodbye, but then there was a data leak somewhere and someone at Google is like, put it out of its misery, shut it down now. And they're also getting rid of Google Hangouts. Did you know this? Yeah, they're getting rid of Google Hangouts. Hold on. It turns out that we'll still be able to video chat and we can still use it for business. But don't worry, Google will make sure that no one is using it for fun. Can't have that. All right, the next story is Tumblr. Their office is across the street here, so they could probably hear me. Tumblr is going to be purging all of the pornographic material from their platform. This is true. So I feel like Tumblr banning porn would be like Gab.ai banning Nazis. They all say, we are a respectable content platform, but everybody knows what's really going on. And finally, the last one I want to bring up, Facebook. Big milestone for Facebook in 2018. Big milestone. In 2018, Facebook finally disappointed their last happy user. Huge accomplishment. I think I figured out what the problem is with Facebook. It's all the people. See, once you have more than one person, a social network starts to be trouble. I know this personally, because in college, I built a crowdsourced venue database, and I was user number one. I showed it to someone else, user number two, and within 5 minutes, they ruined it. I was like, you can't create bar pizza. I just created bar pizza. Now it's in there twice. My venue database is destroyed. It was literally perfect before I invited the second person. It's the same everywhere. I bet the second person on Twitter immediately started annoying the first person on Twitter. You know, they're probably like, delete your account, Jack, something like that. And I don't even want to get into what people asked Marsbot for. Ugh. All right. Yeah. So let's not forget, we talk about user number one and two. Let's not forget that in Foursquare, Dennis is famously user number 32. User number 32, think about what that means. It means that he just invented Foursquare, he got a clean start, he logged on for the first time to the greatest app ever conceived, and there were already 31 assholes waiting for him. They were all creating airport venues in the East Village. I know this, see, I know how it works. All right, the show's on every week, localmaxradio.com, the local maximum on your podcast app. And you'll hear this clip on New Year's. Let's hear it again from the Foursquare audience. All right, Aaron, did you hear that? Did you hear that? Live audience for the first time. I think that was like 150 people.
I was going to ask how big a room that was. They sounded enthusiastic. Perhaps there had been some chemical assistance there.
There was, even though it was a work event. and by the way, I have no idea. There was someone, as I listened to it again, I don't know if I really heard it when I was performing it.
You were too in the zone?
Yeah, but I have no idea who exclaimed, I love you, Max. At the beginning, if that person is listening now, please come forward. I want to know who my secret admirer is.
So that was your first time doing stand up like that?
Stand up, except
I know you've
I was sitting
sketch
down
before.
Right. So it was kind of in between because it was I wrote out my script, and I was sitting down at a desk, so it was more like kind of a newsroom weekend update sort of a thing.
Trevor Noah, Max is coming for you.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, aren't there all of their ratings way down?
I'll be honest. I haven't watched any of those comedy news shows in a while, and I have seen Weekend Update recently, but I feel like this SNL season has not been their strongest. But that's way
our
off
ratings.
Topic.
Our ratings have grown infinity percent this year, so we're going to cross them at some point. You know,
we can only claim that stat for so long, and soon we will be at the 1 year plus mark.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm going to post impressive numbers next year. I know that. So did you hear, cause I have a plan. I'm not going to, it's a pretty straightforward plan. It's nothing too clever, to grow the audience, but you know, put in a lot of work into it. Did you hear my interview with, Miriam about Google a few weeks ago?
I did. And some interesting things to hear there. Like you kind of alluded to this. It seemed like the most interesting piece was the perspective, and that she wasn't, a Google PR spokesperson. She wasn't someone who left on less than stellar terms. It wasn't someone trying to sell a book or pimp a product. And so you kind of got a unbiased is maybe not the right word, but her perspective was not being colored by any outside influences, it seemed. So that was
exactly. See, you get
worthwhile.
It. Yeah, no, I feel like the interview part was very interesting. It sounds like, and that might not be the part that people are interested in. I don't know. That's the part I got into, because that's like how they get people in. And the fact that they don't talk to each other afterwards was very interesting to me.
Yeah, that was both disconcerting and then in retrospect, not entirely surprising. I think it ties to another thing that kind of came across in the interview that I hadn't given much thought to, is that Google is so enormous. It's such a large company that you kept asking her questions about, well, how do they do this on the search team, or how do they do that? And
right.
I maybe know a couple of people who are over there, but I don't interact with them, and so I have no insight into it. And
I was hoping to get kind of the like the company line on these things. Like, there's definitely the company line on, like, don't be evil, organize the world's information, like that sort of thing.
So either they need a better internal PR, or they really have siloed all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Relevant teams only.
Another thing I found interesting was the talk about, so I believe that it's very difficult for a rogue employee to sort of
all the audit stuff and kind of internal security.
Yes, yes. I think it's very difficult for a rogue employee to like start messing with people, and I don't think that happens, but it is interesting that there is kind of this activist culture of people who will go to great lengths to promote their causes, even if it's outside the Google cause at work, which doesn't surprise me that much, but I found it interesting that she said that. And so I sort of feel like but I do feel like, not that I'm confirming everything I say, but like it's the QA bias. It's what you want to check is what matters most.
Yeah,
it's
I'm curious whether that results in a chilling of certain viewpoints because they don't want to speak up because they feel that they're in a minority, or if because of the nature of who works there and their process, that it simply biases towards hiring people who hold certain viewpoints. And when I say I'm curious about that, I say that acknowledging that, okay, even if I were able to come up with an answer to that, what would I do with that information? I have no idea.
Yeah,
but it tickles my brain a little bit.
It sounds like there's a variety of viewpoints. They have no litmus test on who they hire, but there is sort of an encouragement to being, I feel like there's kind of encouragement internally to being kind of an activist, but you have to stay within certain bounds.
And that could be a cultural side effect that because of the type of work they're doing, or at least the type of work that Google used to do and has formed the image, the reputation for Google, it attracts people who are more likely to be activist in their nature because they care about changing the world for the better.
Right.
And so that's not necessarily what they're hiring for, but they end up with people who have those, you know, a lot of companies, they have a type, and that may be one of the defining characteristics of the Google type.
Yeah. It's interesting though. Like I feel like at Foursquare, admittedly, like a small company, people have very strong personal views, just as strong as Google, perhaps even more, but it doesn't come into the workplace as much. I don't know if I could get, if anyone would confirm that, but I could probably ask Miriam next week. But that's sort of how I feel.
That's tricky stuff, because to do anything beyond anecdote with that in terms of collecting data becomes very tricky. It's a touchy subject.
Yeah. Well, it's always a very touchy subject is like the approach to diversity. I actually would agree in that controversial memo that a lot of the programs started in the name of diversity are usually, you know, to pad someone's resume, to make the company look good, and doesn't do much. But I've done work in the name of diversity, really, really other stuff for Foursquare. So Miriam and I, for example, we go out, we're part of this wonderful program called Beyond Coding, and we go to like kind of the local schools and teach soft skills and try to get people into the industry.
High schools or colleges?
Colleges, City University of New York, we go to Toro. And it's like, okay, like those people happen to have, I would say, like different... probably different gender balance, different ethnic balance, different socioeconomic balance than with the average person in tech. But it's also the case that they're more likely to be the people we overlook. You don't have to get everyone from one of the top schools. A lot of people can do this computer science work if they've been through these other schools. And it's sort of like to aid in the recruitment process for the, for the industry in general. I sort of feel like, okay, a lot of these diversity initiatives are bad. I kind of feel like there's a way to sort of join it and do it the right way versus just complain about it.
On that note, I have perhaps some interesting insight, and I can throw a big name company under the bus on this.
Okay, go for it. Don't get yourself fired.
but I do have some past experience in a previous career in career development. So I only mention that because it perhaps gives the false impression that I have the credentials to speak knowledgeably on this. So one of my colleagues formerly worked at General Electric, GE, in their aviation division. And he mentioned that they have a great leadership development program. They call it the Edison program, where they take people right out of college and they run them through it's a 2 or 3 year cycle where they bounce you around between different locations, working on all sorts of different projects. And I believe you do your master's as part of this program as well. And the idea is that from that crop are the people who will be the future, you know, team leads, division heads, perhaps eventually, you know, business heads within the company on the technical side. And they've gotten stuck in a bit of a recruiting rut, because while they recruit in many places for that, something like... And I'm throwing out a number, this may not be the actual number, but a majority, so the number I was going to throw out is like 70% of the entrants into the Edison program are coming out of a single university, which happens to be the university, the largest technical university closest to the main facility for their aviation business.
That makes sense.
So they're not recruiting the best and the brightest. Right. The HR department or their recruiting group is recruiting the best and the brightest of what is easily conveniently available to them. And so they have a huge bias towards that, which
they have lower acquisition costs.
And you could argue that they're getting a lower yield out of that group, that a smaller percentage of those.
What do you mean lower yield?
So a smaller percentage of the people that they recruit into the program from that university make it through the program, or make it through the program plus 5 years or whatever at the company.
Sure.
Compared to other schools. But that hasn't caused them to change that approach.
It could be that, like I said, the cost of getting people from that school into the program is probably less than going out all over the country.
And so I mentioned that primarily because if you have a system that works or seems good enough or works in a given time and, you know, a moment in time for your company, then it's really tempting to kind of freeze that in place. And I think that may be some of what Google is suffering from, that they had this reputation for having an innovative and challenging hiring process, but that was like a decade ago. And I don't know that they've evolved it much. And so what worked well then has not necessarily kept up with the landscape. And
are you talking about Google?
Google.
Well,
in this case, yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, I went through it a decade ago. It was not very good then. Mainly because they didn't hire me.
Well, their loss.
I agree with you. I mean, there's the same thing with product bias. There's recruitment bias too, and I think to expand your set of potential people to recruit for, you go after the marginal person, the person that maybe has kind of a lower cost of talking to, maybe has a good chance of actually being good and being able to do the job, but you might be missing in your current processes. Because I do think there are a lot of people that we miss, and it's worth going after them. But like,
there's also a competitive piece to it too, that if you're going after what appears to be a limited pool, it may be in your interest to, instead of going after the same candidate that all the other companies are going to be trying to recruit, go after somebody who is a little bit less typical, who it might require a little bit more time and effort on your end to develop them, but who you can, you know, develop more loyalty to your company because you've helped help them grow as a person in their career, you know, technically or otherwise.
Yeah,
as opposed to someone who's going to jump ship to the next tech company that's going to pay them, you know, more and offer them better stock options.
Right. I would just, I mean, if I started a company, I wouldn't mind just hiring all kids from Brooklyn. They just work really hard and they know a ton of stuff.
there's definitely a difference in philosophy there to.
Yeah.
To take that approach.
I feel like I was going somewhere with this. I don't really, I don't remember what I was saying. Yeah.
We were talking about Google and some of the inside views on their hiring process, and we kind of went off the rails there.
Yeah. No, I feel like it was something about, recruiting. That's okay. We'll move on.
You'd mentioned the memo and until it came up in the interview, I'd completely forgotten about that. Talk about hot button issues and touchy subjects.
Yeah. People ask, why don't I dive into the claims made? That's too long of a discussion.
Yeah. It's another subject. And I don't know that this is the right venue to relitigate some of those things.
I thought it was interesting to go through some of the suggestions he made and some of the claims he made about Google, because he made some claims, but it was like, okay, what does that really mean? I'm thinking of, you know, what's their high level company goal that he's talking about?
And she did mention that he presented the paper in at least a very scientific sounding fashion.
I think he might have thought that would have gotten him able
more
to
traction.
Get these ideas passed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it makes it more difficult to tease apart what is him following, you know, certain speech and thought patterns to make it sound legitimate, and what is actual, you know, real truthful. But truthful is the wrong word. But you know, what are the facts, and what is being perhaps massaged in there? Because I'm sure there are some things that should not be taken at face value, as with every position paper. It's called a position paper for a reason, not a statement of facts. So, it started the wheels turning on that again, which I don't know that I want to get too deep into that anytime soon. Because
no, I think we should move on issue, before we but, get. Yeah. We're probably going to get a lot of letters already.
Well, you said you got quite a bit of feedback from that.
A little bit.
So I look forward to hearing some of the listener feedback that we can dig into.
Maybe in a later episode. I almost want to get into like a specific, like someone to ask me a very specific question about something that we said, because a specific question I can answer directly on the show, I think.
but the sort of general ones where people are just kind of uncomfortable with the subject. It's hard to respond to that. Moving on, I don't know if you got a chance to see the one with Shawnee that was this week.
I did, although I did not see it. I listened to it, which seems very appropriate for the subject.
Yes. Well, I saw it because I was there. But I've been trying to get Shawnee for a long time, like 6 months, and we finally scheduled it. So that was great. And I'm excited for the audio internet, but I think it's going to be a long road to get to. Man, I've been thinking about these innovations since I was doing radio 15 years ago. And it's just like, I don't know, how do we get that interactivity back? How do we do ads right? Maybe doing ads right is a little bit more possible just because there's so much money going into it. Mm. I really wish. I do think the one thing that I would push back on, I think she's right about the ads being like lifeblood of the internet now and all this free information. But I do feel that the over-reliance on advertising is the reason why all of these great product improvements, for example, in audio, like turning audio into a internet-like thing where you can click through and everyone figures out what the perfect interface is, and it's a difficult problem. It's going to have a lot of money going into it. A lot of people trying to do it. I feel like our business models are not allowing for that. So there might have to be a business model innovation for that to come.
Yeah, through. Well, it certainly seems like it's going to be kind of a platform issue more than I guess the way I'm thinking of it, the equivalent would be. For the text internet, yes, somebody came up with HTML and how hyperlinks work and all that. But what mattered was getting the browsers to adopt that standard and all play by the same rule.
Well, he invented the first browser, so but yeah.
Right, but you don't want to be and now that there are so many different platforms, if Apple if iTunes comes out with a certain interface, but Spotify and Pandora and Stitcher and SoundCloud and whoever else don't jump on that bandwagon, or if it's kept proprietary, that's not going to change the industry, or if it does, it'll be very different than everybody kind of working on the same open standard.
Yeah, I would like to see. I mean, there have been a lot of startups trying to do things where, hey, you upload these podcasts and people can, and I've seen this, people can like tag different sections of the podcast, like they could tag a certain part of our conversation as being a point that contains this, like we're talking about a specific subject here. I can like tag this part, and I've seen a lot of stuff with that. I mean, Vimeo did a lot of stuff with that in the videos, but it just didn't come through. I think maybe the business model isn't there. That's the problem.
Well, and as far as interface, the other piece of that is it's not just the distribution platform. But it's the player, so I don't listen to my podcasts using iTunes or SoundCloud or Stitcher. I use, a third party app.
The player is the browser.
If you have an ability to skip ads and do other things, or, essentially bookmark chapters in a podcast type thing, that's going to be entirely dependent on how the player interfaces with that protocol, that standard.
Right. It's interesting. It could have to be something that, like, where the player does the voice recognition, the player does the content tagging, and the player does all of that for you. Like, it's not literally markup. Hmm. It's not like someone's going through marking it up. It has to be on the player level is another possibility.
So, a place where some work has been done to try and improve. Or add kind of context markers to audio going back years, decades actually, is in recordings for the blind and dyslexic, which used to be, it at least goes back to the days of audio tape, tape cassettes, and it was also present in the days of compact discs for CD players, but But what they did essentially is they had a certain series of
audio
tones.
I see another history podcast coming on.
and so it was kind of like the, I don't know if you ever had these when you were a kid, but you get a storybook and it came with an audio tape. Sure. And it would be, you know, when you hear this tone, that means to turn the page. And it was
a
more advanced version of that for reading, you know, more advanced books. And so there, you know, tones for page turns and chapter breaks. And so you could keep track with it. And there was ability to play it, you know, at multiple speeds. So some of those things are kind of rolled into modern audiobooks. But there's, you know, it was a way of trying to embed additional information into the existing material. And I don't know that that's something that you could do with audio. I'm imagining kind of something from the touchtone era. So when it used to, you know, you still get it, I guess, in some phone trees, you know, push one for, you know, push one for English, push two for Spanish or something like that in a phone menu. And it used to be all based on the tones that the keys on your phone made before it all went digital. And so if you didn't have a touchtone phone, you could try and imitate the frequency of that key. And I'm envisioning a system where to skip an ad, you have to screech an appropriate frequency noise into your your player,
so annoying.
Which would be hilarious, but absolutely not practical.
No,
so
not
I don't know why I went down that rabbit hole.
Not something I want to see happen on the subway. It's bad enough when everybody gets the flash flood warning at the same time. Yeah. So this is the end of year show or the new year show, I guess the beginning of the next year show. We've come a long way this year. You've come a long way this year. I don't think you technically signed up to be a co-host on the show. It kind of just happened.
Well, last time I looked at it, I'm on less than 50% of the shows. So
yeah. Well,
so I'm only a part time.
Well, but we're all part time. So I got this question for you. What was your favorite show of the ones that you were on?
Okay, so I got some advance warning, so I did look this up, but hands down, and probably because of the level of reaction that it got, I'm going to go with episode 14, Robot Communism Sucks, and AI on line one.
I've got to read that. Did you get any specific feedback from that one that I'm not aware of?
No, I think that part was that we seemed to get good listener engagement on that, and the topic kept coming back up, and we kept trying not to refer to it as the communism article, but we failed miserably
because every time it became the communism article. So for those of you who don't remember, that was the one where it was a professor in China. So communism is not a bad word there, but he's talking about how AI will lead to like perfected communism or something like. Am I right there? It was something like that. And so we talked about it.
I forget whether it was perfection of communism or collapse of capitalism.
Or capital, right? Collapse of capitalism.
Something along those lines. Yeah.
And it was that's not strange if it was just in China, right? That's like part of the ideology. But it was published in the Washington Post, made to sound like it was something that like Americans might want to believe, and it was just so totally. it was just so totally off the wall. And I think I also think that got a really good response. That was the top show for a while until we grew the show. Other things came up, but that was the first like top show. The one that came after that was the top show now is, well, episode zero, a lot of people come back to, but the one with Chris Messina that I did on conversational commerce, that's very, that has one of the highest numbers. Looking back on the shows I did, it's really hard for me to pick among all my guests because I had so many wonderful guests. I don't like to choose favorites. One of the conversations we had that I really liked was, I think it was episode 33. It's called Ads, Bias, Censorship, Democracy. I like that ABCD. And it wasn't the most popular of the recent shows, but I feel like it kind of tied together a lot of the news items and the product ideas that came up in 2018. And I would like to have another listen to that because I don't think I've listened to that since we put it out, but I feel like that one tied it all together.
Well, we've got another chance to consider our favorites and retrospect, because you'll be hitting the 1 year mark not too far in the future.
I don't think we should do a retrospect like every month, Aaron, but we can still do it. Okay. I think that next year at this time we'll be at number 100, which means that you could have our year long and episode 100 at the same time.
So that begs an important question. When you set up the website, did you design it to support 3-digit episode numbers, or are you going to have a major redesign?
No, it's just text. So
no, Y2K problem.
No. I mean, it is a problem when I sort the files, because it's not going to be, it's not 001, but, that'll be my problem on my file system. So I also, in terms of the guests, I feel like I'm going to miss some people. Obviously, I mentioned Chris Messina, Dennis Crowley. That was a big deal. Miriam and Stephanie to start out with. That was pretty awesome. And then more recently, David Petrugia and Charlie Oliver. I kind of did them together. They were just such good speakers that they got such a big, big reaction. And you know who I felt was Shirin Mojarad on Causality.
That was a surprising
hit, because I didn't know what was going to happen when I spoke to her. It's always, one of the things I'm trying to do on this program is take, engineers who, some of them do public speaking, but I mean, I talk to people who speak a lot for their other roles as well, like some of the other ones I mentioned, but, being able to speak to some of these engineers and get that information out in a really clear way, is kind of really rewarding, and Shirin really rose to the occasion on that one.
Yeah, it's I like the episodes where we go into something deeply technical, and I guess it's been a while since you've done kind of a tutorial.
Yeah, well, the Paradox, I think, is the last one.
Yeah,
that was a fun one. I recently listened to the part of that one again. That one was some. I feel like that's an evergreen episode that is going to lead to a lot more good stuff. The solo ones don't get as much downloads, much listens, but I'm still going to continue to do them, because we don't do that much. And sometimes you have to do a solo episode, but it's it really allows me to go in depth into a topic and really plan out the direction of the conversation.
Yeah, you don't have me derailing you with random tangents.
Exactly. No. No, because when we go, we're talking about the news, and we're trying to have a conversation that goes in different directions. Sometimes, actually, we do a show where we go in a very specific direction, but it's usually we write out the questions for each other beforehand.
So there's got to be something in the speech recognition and natural language processing algorithm for mapping out, are we on a tangent now?
That's interesting. Yeah. Well, also coming back from the tangent, that's always an interesting situation. Oftentimes we do know where we are in the map, but then sometimes we don't. We just get lost.
Yeah, I guess there's some very narrow AIs that are really good at bringing you back from tangents, but that's because they only know how to talk about the one thing.
Yeah, yeah. So I was also, in terms of 2018, I was looking at the show's topics, and I looked at the list of topics that we've covered on the show. Pretty cool to read them all out in alphabetical order. You ready for it?
Hit me.
Okay. Bayesian inference, Bitcoin and crypto, causality, content moderation and censorship, economics, emerging technology, entrepreneurship, Facebook, Foursquare, Google, information theory, logic, machine learning, management, media, podcasting, politics, product, software engineering, and targeted advertising. So
we do not have a uniform distribution across the alphabet.
No, you're not supposed to. Although, if we
need
come
more
out,
cues.
No, well, if we come out with our quantum computing, I actually am planning to do a show on
excellent.
That. Excellent. But you're right. We have to get every letter of the alphabet if we're going to do the Local Maximum children's book. It has to be every letter. I think we'll be able to get that in a few years.
Adventures in merchandising.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's targeted advertising. There's just plain advertising. So I got your A there. Okay. So, all right, let's look ahead to 2019. I assume we're going to have a lot of the same issues. As I said in the stand-up routine, man, this year was not a positive year for technology. People have been, and Charlie Oliver mentioned this, and I've even when I was talking about this on Dennis, and other people have mentioned it, that we're kind of like at a lull in consumer technology. Not as many things are interesting are happening right now. The big companies like Facebook and whatnot seem to be taking away features. Amazon, you know, doesn't have their drones out. It was, you know, they've been doing some amazing things, but, you know, a lot of their promises, some of their promises fell flat. Although, to be fair to Amazon, it doesn't matter how the package gets there, just that it gets there fast.
Yeah.
As I mentioned with Facebook and Google and Tumblr, features are being taken away, not added. People are very unhappy with how they're talking to each other online. People are very unhappy with the security situation. And yes, I'm a tech optimist, but like it was a rough year in terms of, in terms of the news item and what happened this year. So I don't know if we could turn that around for 2019. Well, first of all, do you agree with my assessment on 2018, just in the generic, like, you know, how technology has panned out for the year? That might not even make sense as a question. But
in a word, yes. But in more words,
some people are always very negative, and
I don't know. Given that perception is reality, my next statement may be irrelevant. But okay. I don't know. Clearly, the perception is that this year has been, if not treading water, then perhaps some setbacks technology-wise because of all the things that you mentioned. I'm curious if that's actually the case, or if there have been breakthroughs that we're just not hearing about, we're not talking about, that they're somehow just under the surface, or if this year has really been absent major breakthroughs and advances.
Oh, there absolutely has. I mean, as we mentioned before, this was the year the first consumer self-driving car was put out. Now, people are writing, oh, it's kind of dumb. Like it only, I've got a guy there in the car. Come on, it only takes me to certain places. But I'm pretty sure Google didn't invest billions of dollars into this to launch it just to keep it as that. So
right.
There's a lot of things going on under the surface, and a lot of promising startups.
But will this year be the watershed moment when they look back and are writing the story of the driverless car? Will they say, 2018 was the big debut when they finally made it happen? I feel like if anything, 2018 will be a footnote, and that they did some early trials, but it wasn't until 20 insert later year.
Yeah, that you're not that, even giving me the
that
decade.
They really launched it.
Yeah, maybe. Although it could be, I don't know. A lot of people say, well, Facebook was founded in 2003, Foursquare in 2009, but in those years, and the iPhone in 2007, but in those years, those products weren't very good.
Well,
like you couldn't do that much with them.
Were they not really good, or they seem like they're not really good given where we are today?
Yeah, that's true. Well, the original iPhone was interesting. Like it was a status symbol to have it, but think about it. It wasn't even 3G. It was basically like it was like one of those early internet phones where you can brag to everyone that you can go on the internet, but you really can't practically on the internet.
But what was the internet back then? I mean,
it was 2007. There was a lot of stuff on the internet.
Was YouTube there yet?
Of course. Yeah.
I'm losing track of what was when.
I was reading the other day, by the way, it's funny you mentioned YouTube, how like a famous YouTuber is Bob Ross. He died in 1997. You know, the painter?
Yeah. I was going to say, you mean that Bob Ross?
Yes, that Bob Ross. Yeah, okay. Happy Little Trees. I saw on Twitter somebody, I'll find the tweet, somebody said they were talking to a 10-year-old. They're like, wow, that's a great painting. How did you learn to paint like that? I learned it from a YouTuber. And they're like, Bob Ross? Yeah, do you know him? So it's really interesting how he is, he's a YouTuber. And YouTube came out maybe I don't know, I want to say 6 years after his death.
Some things live on.
Yeah, although I remember when those were in PBS, probably they were reruns. And It would have been so much better if I had them on YouTube, because you can kind of pause and then try to do what he did and then watch it again if you need to watch it again. I can't imagine it being nearly as useful if it's just on once and you just kind of have to catch it. I'm sure some people try to VCR.
There are two options. Yeah, you can record it, or during the pledge drive, you can pledge insert X amount, and they'll send you the tape.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure that they made... because you don't make any money airing things on PBS. I suppose the network must buy the show, but I'm sure they made most of their money on the sale of the recordings and guidebooks and stuff.
But it's amazing, if you think about it, how much more useful that is to have it in the YouTube.
Same thing with cooking shows.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody watches a cooking show as they're cooking and uses it as guidance, but you can do that with short YouTube clips now.
Yeah, and your iPad. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You kind of watch the show and you sort of, people used to do this. They used to take notes and, on paper and then have
little
to,
index
like,
cards.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, index cards. I still take notes on index cards for the podcast. I just find it helpful. That's a little strange, but no, maybe it makes sense. All right, so...
I would imagine that your stand-up routine would be much easier to manage with index cards than trying to shuffle full-size, legal paper or
No, it was
paper.
Full-size paper. It was. I printed it out
on the
office
printer. You had the
desk,
though.
Yeah, I printed it out in the office printer beforehand. And it worked out like that. All right. So what would we like to see in 2019 in terms of technology and in terms of the local maximum topics?
Ooh, I haven't prepared my wish list.
Yeah. We already gave our predictions. I do think that the whole malaise will turn around either next year or the year after. I'm gonna predict that. But let's talk about what you want to hear.
It's got to break at some point. The question is our tech malaise decoupled from our social and political malaise? And I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah. I sort of feel like we have to wait till the end of the decade. Things just change. I know it's. It seems so
far away.
It's 12 months.
So you're saying the end of the decade is the end of 2019, not the end of 2020.
Right, yeah.
Because that gets us into this whole, well, when did the millennium actually begin discussion?
I hate that. I like the 2000. I know we started at year one, but come on, that's not my problem. All right, so that could be the most controversial thing on that we've... issue that we've discussed on the show. When does the millennium start?
It's not a topic you hear discussed very often.
No. So topics for 2019. I said I might want to do something on quantum computing. That could be fun. I know that people wanted to hear more on self-driving cars. I might get someone to talk about it from the more technical side.
Are there any self-driving kind of enterprises testing out in New York City yet?
No.
Because I know there's supposedly one in the Seaport District in Boston, so I don't know that I have it in me to do an in the field recording, but I would be fascinated to hear a segment of the show recorded live from the back of a self-driving car.
No, in 2018 in New York City was again the year they took away things. They took away a bunch of Ubers, so now it's more expensive. In 2019, the L train is going to go away. A bunch of train stations were on and offline. In terms of transportation, not a great year for New York. In terms of 2019 on the show, I have something that I want to see. Aaron, the audience knows nothing about you or what your expertise is in.
We've dropped some hints here and there.
Yeah, but we've never done a full interview of you either about your past or about whatever it is that you're an expert in, which I still don't really know what that is. So I'm going to have to get you on there at some point, unless the audience tells me to stop.
That's intimidating, but I suppose it's fair game at this point.
At this point, yeah. I still don't have a bio from you for the website. Come on. No, I did that purposefully.
Or a recent headshot, although you did catch me at the tech retreat in a couple of photos.
I'll tell you... I did that purposefully because now we could have the big reveal. Everybody, you're like this mysterious voice. Nobody knows who you are. And we're going to have this big, there's going to be this lead up to, oh, we're finally going to have a show all about Aaron. And everyone's going to listen to
it. This
is
a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Well, it's not live, so we could always edit. As I say, people actually end up editing very little when I say that you could edit anything that you say. People don't reveal anything too crazy. And yeah, it always, but it does take the pressure off.
Yeah. One thing I'll throw out that I'd like to see more of in 2019 is I keep catching hints that there's major stuff happening in the crypto world, big developments. And I don't follow it closely enough to know whether that's just, well, the news media doesn't really understand. And so anytime someone says something about crypto, they throw words around like that. Or if there really are big changes coming, and if so, should I care? I'm counting on you to keep us abreast of what's happening there.
I definitely have plans to get more crypto focused things. Obviously we had, Christian Lundqvist was very good, on the technical side. And then we had, Assemblyman Clyde Vanel and, Naomi Brockwell was excellent. We're definitely going to do a lot more this year. I think I can get some guests that have kind of a unique perspective. Maybe I can debate a crypto doubter. That would be fun.
They seem to be in everywhere. No short supply these days.
I'm sure a lot of people have found them when they went home for Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever, family, all over the place. Aaron, anything else you'd like to see in 2019?
I'm looking forward to a year better than 2018 in every way possible.
All right. Sounds good to me. Have a happy new year.
Happy new year to everybody out there.
That's the show. Remember to check out the website at localmaxradio.com. If you want to contact me, the host, or ask a question that I can answer on the show, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. This show is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and more. If you want to keep up, remember to subscribe to The Local Maximum on one of these platforms and to follow my Twitter account, @MaxSklar. Have a great week.
He'll feel the power.
And she said, I don't care what you say, you're going to see.